Hey folks, I just got off a very interesting call with Ron Lynch on the podcast. I wanted to put this video out in preface. We had a couple of things to address here real quick. We had some technical issues. So if you watch this next or listen to it, the audio will come out really clear. But if you're watching the YouTube, you're going to see probably a number of breaks in the video as the team puts this back together because we had a lot of technical issues through Ron's connection. And we had to kind of piece the whole conversation together to make sure that it came out in one time. So be aware of that. If you see it's choppy a little, that's why it's happening. The second thing is this is a little bit beyond just business conversation. I want to preface that and make you aware we went through some very heavy topics in the areas of the current business world, the state of our economy, the state of the world, even biblical revelations and topics around optimism and doomer optimism. And it's going to challenge your mind. It's going to challenge your hearts. It's going to challenge your situation. So I encourage you to buckle up, power through this convo because there's so much to unpack here that's so valuable. I know I'm going to have Ron come back on and listen to this again. We're gonna talk some more and go through this in some more detail and probably unpack some of the stuff that we touched based on. It's going to challenge your worldview. It's going to challenge your situation, maybe your heart and your mind, but it's also going to encourage you, hopefully empower you and get you out there making some changes in your life, into business. So without further ado, let's unpack this conversation with Ron Lynch right now.
Welcome to the High Voltage Business Builders, a show where we interview people committed to making their next million through passive income using real estate, brokering, e-commerce, and beyond. If you're a passionate business builder yourself, visit voltagebtb.com to get in touch now.
Here we are, we're back again. Little tech glitch, we're not going to give up. That's part of perseverance, right? It's never giving up. So we're back to Zoom. We were talking about a lot of things yesterday. And we're just going to kind of reiterate some of those today. There's obviously some new things happening based on just the conversation we had yesterday, which may only sound, if somebody could have listened to yesterday's recording, they would probably think it's prophetic based on today's latest events in the world. But it had nothing to do with that. It just has to do with follow the rabbit trail and, you know, look at the coincidences and realize there's a lot of truth happening. The most recent one, as I messaged you this morning, was Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka's government has kind of collapsed under the fact that it's ran out of oil. Gas. The lines are incredible. Go look up the pictures. There's definite chaos. They're trying to restore order with shooting people, which, you know, that always works really well when the police come in and start shooting people. Can't see what the problem is with that. And people are pulling the government officials out of their house and beating them to death in the street. So things in Sri Lanka have gone pretty bad overnight.
Yeah. And what is unique about Sri Lanka?
In
culture?
Culture.
They're just a petri dish of the rest of us.
They
are. It can happen there. It can happen anywhere.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that we were discussing yesterday is the natural evolution of the direction that we're going culturally.
Yes.
Is risky. And it seems to be on a trajectory that's unstoppable.
Yes, domino's falling, right? As we watch Russia make the move in Ukraine, domino one went down. As we watch our economy starting to slide a little bit with gas being now an average of what I see this morning, 457 on average. It's six in some places.
Six, and there's discussions of it going to 10.
Yeah, which is part of that. You know, if we look back 3 months as to where we are now, if it's projected to keep going, which at this point, who knows, anybody's game. If it keeps going in pattern, it will be above $10 to $15 by the time we reach November, which I don't know if that coincides with other things that are happening in the world or what, but it certainly starts to add up. But what does that mean for us in business and life, spirituality and confidence is some of the things I think we'll talk about today. Just in disclaimer, this is going to have a lot of conversations. Normally, we're very focused on business, although we dive into life and other things. I think this is a good time for us to start talking about all the things that do impact business and life, and you're the best person I know right now to unpack some of that. So tell us what's on your heart and mind, Ron. Let's listen to you.
Well, first of all, the situation that we're currently in globally and as a country didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
And there's about 2 years ago, I woke up to the idea that we may be at the beginning of the biblical tribulation, which sounds absolutely as lunatic to me as it comes out of my mouth.
Yeah.
As it probably does as it strikes your ears.
Right. No doubt.
But when the pandemic began, I went back and I opened my Bible and just out of I don't do that. I'm like not a Bible banger. I don't do this on a daily basis, nor did I my whole life. But I've had a faith my whole life, and I've always relied on it for wisdom. But I don't use it like a reference material. Like I'm going to go look something up. I opened it, and wherever I open it to, I know that's what I'm supposed to read. And I opened it to a book called Zechariah that I'd never read before. And I started reading the content and picturing myself as the writer, being a person who writes drama, screenplays, stories. And what appeared to me to be really obvious words about 9/11 and about New Babylon. And I started to do more and more research, which ended up with me writing a book called A Screenwriter's Guide to Tribulation. And what that book was is a look at the world from the moment Israel was reformed as a nation in 1948 and the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls by Muslim Bedouin kids in the Assyrian desert out by the Red Sea, and pasting together the Bible, the Quran, the Talmud, the Torah, and the common prophecies that would historically happen in all of those tales prior to, I hate to use the word apocalypse because people think of that as being destruction.
Mm.
But there, if you read the Bible closely and pay attention to it, it's actually, we get to the apocalypse and Christ intervenes in that story. The world's not destroyed. The world's rebuilt through a new order. And what we have done in our world, it seems, is we've come up with these systems, whether they were caveman, agrarian, feudal, monarchies, communism, capitalism. And we seem to feel that capitalism is the pinnacle of human ability. Maybe it is. Certainly capitalism and its reliance on Christianity has brought more technical diversity to the world, cultural advance, technical advance, to great degree, liberty and freedom. But it's clearly not perfect.
Yeah.
And in the West, we want to say, no, this is perfect. And I have to back away from that and go, if I just look at this as a scientist or a historian and go, what's true? Is that true? Well, to a degree, it's true. But there's obviously conflict in the world, and it's created its own problems. And we seem to be devolving into kind of, again, a monarchy or feudal system, where there's the super poor, the ultra wealthy, and a massive gap between them.
Yeah, the serfs.
Yeah, the serfs. And there are these families around the world that really are operating. We think of them as government, but they're really cartels.
They are big mafia.
Yeah, they're big mafia. Whether it's the Bushes or the Clintons or the Obamas or the Bidens, like these people are not, and they're starting, we're starting to see their children rise through the oligarchy that they've created.
Yes.
That there's a banker class, an ownership class. Like if you go open up the Forbes 500 top richest, wealthiest people in the world, I guarantee you they're not the 500 wealthiest people in the world. Those are the people that Forbes wants published, that we want societally published, because they're all kind of famous known brands. But behind that, there's people that own banks and families that have been around for years that aren't even on that list. So there's an ownership class above that PR ownership class.
There's the R's. We'll say the other R families.
And I think you mentioned the movie The Matrix.
Yes, boy.
Which talk a little bit about that, because I think that your lens of that was really useful.
Well, I mean, for me personally, it was obviously it was a technological advance in the movie making industry that I found very fascinating. From the moment they hit that opening scene and she cuts scenes and does the 360, that was a technological advance we've never seen in movies before, which was quite wonderful to watch. And experience, and now look back and see that has been such an effect on so many things in the media space. But the more important part was the messages below the messages, the things that were realizations, things that you didn't catch on, something you knew was not right. Obviously, we get the premise of a guy who's not living in the system he thinks he's living in an alternate reality of his mind, created for him in order to control him or manipulate him through the aspects of literally making him an energy source. And in this way, these systems of control we're talking about, these people above us, have left us in such a way as the serf generation of people who are debt slaves in control through media and other mechanisms for our mind in order to keep us powered in the system of control they want us to go after. And we've manipulated it and been manipulated so much. And there's all this symbology in that movie that doesn't get unlocked until much later in your walk. Things like, well, that was in 99, and we know 9/11 was in 2001, but there's at least four or five different points in that movie that point out 9/11. Now, you may be listening to me thinking, again, I'm a wacko conspiracy nut job. How could I possibly think this is true? But in actuality, they pointed to 9/11 multiple times in 99. So there's a you end that rabbit hole in whichever direction you want to go. I'll just say Building 7, and I'll end that. The end result is that you notice that we have now seen how his breakout is our breakout. Like, we see the awakening. He was in an awakened state. You know, fast forward since 99, many of us have kind of broken out of that system and realized where we fit as this battery in this industrial complex that we just talked about a second ago. And you tend to resist that. And in the resistance of that, others will pull back on you. Those who are indoctrinated in the system, those who are too far into it, those who are in the matrix, because they want to pull you back because they're afraid of where it might take them. And they're not choosing to do that. And the matrix has a whole theme and a whole system of it around. It was actually written by a Christian woman who wrote a book. You probably know this on that topic. And then they stole the screenplay, readapted it a little bit and ran it out. But I'm sure you already know that.
Well, when you take a look at your lifetime, or just the average person since 1900, say 1913, when Jekyll Island and the reformation of the U.S. dollar and the Fed and the IRS was created, think about how much. If you have to ask that average person, what's your tax bracket? Well, they'll probably say, oh, it's 22%, or it's 28%, or it's 26%. They'll come up with a number that's their tax bracket. Yep. But if you were to add your income tax to the amount of gas tax in your gasoline, to your car tabs, to your property tax, to your mortgage, start facing
to your bank fees, to your debit fees, to your credit card, and so on and so on.
But I own this, and everything that you own is pretty much a devaluing asset, like vehicles generally devaluing asset. So what are you working for?
Mm-hmm.
You're working for contribution. You're actually contributing to the machine more than the machine is contributing to you.
That's right.
If you added up all of those taxes, and even on the surface, our taxes are about 55% right now.
Correct.
I mean, that's just state and local taxes and vehicle taxes and gas taxes and sales taxes. Everything that says tax that is open. And then there's these closed taxes. And now you have a political system that's saying, hey, we're going to take away the inheritance of families. There's going to be a massive inheritance tax. So everything you built in your life isn't going to transfer to your kids or your grandkids. You can't build legacy yet. Right. There's a whole class of people that are at the other end of those taxes, literally living in castles that are collecting all of it.
Collecting
and
all.
The idea of you will own nothing and be happy.
World Economic Forum. Absolutely. 2030.
Gives young people sometimes a relief. They're like, well, good. I don't have a responsibility. I can just have experiences, man.
I don't have anything anyways. So what do I got to lose?
It's a poisoning of the mind to teach somebody to think that. That's, you know, it's like Stockholm syndrome, falling in love with your abuser.
Yeah.
Suddenly you're supporting this system that's abusing you and you think that it's okay. But guess what? There's no such thing as you will own nothing and be happy. What it actually means is we'll own everything.
And we'll give you whatever we think you should have.
We'll let you live until we no longer need you.
Then we no longer need you. And then we get into eugenics, which is a whole nother ball of wax in this. We're going to unpack a whole lot, guys. I warned you about this from the very beginning because there's a lot that ties to this. Like, you know, is the Federal Reserve really an actual federal entity? And if you haven't figured that one out yet, let me give you the shortcut. No, it's not. It's a private corporation. When you get into understanding... owned by the banks who take your money, right? Yeah, give it to another corporation called the IRS, who then launders that money back to the banks and then gives it back to you at an interest, which they got from you in the first place. So you want to talk about pyramid schemes, and people scream about online pyramid schemes and scams. You're living in the biggest one ever created in history, called the United States Corporation. And when you understand the differences, and you mentioned this a minute ago, how was it formed? Where did it start? The question back is, who was on the Titanic and what happened that was so important about that event?
Yeah. And here we are today. And I think the people's memories are short. So let's just stick with what we can remember in the last 48 months.
Yeah, there's a clip.
There's a lot of cards that have been played on the table right in front of your face.
Yes.
The number one card is the printing of money.
Yep.
The unabashed printing of money is causing the inflation that we're seeing. Is that's why we're about to have $10 gas, and that's going to trickle into everything else. Our inflation number, as it's being fed to us by the news media, is a much lower number than what it actually is. They're telling you it's 7, 8, 9%. It's actually more like 70% right now. The number is jumping off the chart because of this currency overprint. Yeah. Now, why would anybody do that?
Right.
Because we want to get off the dollar. There is a great global push to end the tethering to the United States dollar and instead digitally tether the planet to everything. So that everything becomes monetized and becomes equity. That means your house, your car, your life, your job becomes part of the state equity. That's what "you'll own nothing and be happy" means, is we're going to move you to a digital dollar and you can't do any transaction in the world without us taking a piece of it. And we know what all the transactions are that you are doing. Therefore, we can politically influence how you behave. Because you're being tracked. And if you're being tracked, you can be humiliated. And people fear humiliation.
Yes, fear of rejection. Yep.
We're in a culture of cancellation and embarrassment and humiliating people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the power actually is nobody wants to be found out for being naughty. And the fact of the matter is, the leaders are the naughtiest ones of the bunch.
Right.
But that's where we're headed, is we're going to print a lot of money. We're going to collapse the system. We're going to digitize the system. If you want to play in the system, you have to be a digital participant. If you want to be a digital participant, what are we going to solve? Oh, we're going to solve crime. We're going to solve immigration, the border crossings, and vaccinations and healthcare.
Yep.
You know how we're going to do it? We're voting. We're going to solve that too. We're going to make sure that Neil is Neil and Ron is Ron. And here's their chip to identify them.
Yep. But it's for your health. It's for your security. It's for your safety. And where's the last time we saw that message propagated on a population that dehumanized another population? We'll go back to World War II, right? We saw this exact propaganda and media being used by Goebbels on a mass, hypnosis and mass formation strategy. And it worked very well. To the point that some people deny to this day that it existed. And even if they were there, they still deny the truth about it. And we're watching that, this control. And that's where that matrix came in again for your mind in order to basically get you to comply and to all of the good narrative talking points about why this works. Now, you have a resistance shirt on. I could be wearing one today, frankly, because I feel like I am the resistance to a degree. Because my goal here is to wake up people to whatever, business life and mechanism I can influence them from. And from there, I actually take them into other conversations that usually lead into other topics much along the lines of this. But this is a bit radical for anybody listening, Ron. And they may feel like this is a little bit like we are doomers and gloomers and have no hope, right? But in actuality, you cracking your Bible open gives me hope.
Yeah, I'll tell you a couple things about that too. Because first, I want to move this from the idea that this is just fluff and fiction,
right,
to some reality for folks. What one of the programming things that you've been told over your course of your lifetime is that the Bible is a metaphor and that's been rewritten and changed many, 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 many times.
Right.
The importance of 1947 and 46, 47, 48, and the discovery of the Dead Sea Scrolls was those scrolls are archaeologically proven to have been lost in this cave in the year 77. So this was right after John died. This was immediately after the life of Christ. And it is the Bible, the Talmud, the Torah, all of these scrolls. And when validated, rolled out and transmitted from Greek, Aramaic, and Hebrew, what's discovered is the contents of those books, the Bible, the Talmud, and the Torah, that you and collections of books that you get at Barnes & Noble today,
mm-hmm.
are identical. Mm-hmm. So it has not been rewritten. It's been translated in a number of, there's all kinds of, 300 different translations of the Bible, whether it's the New American Standard or King James. Right. But that aside, the general construct and contents of these are intact. This book was written that long ago.
Right.
Now, that's when it was sealed. You look back prior, the Old Testament was written up to 1,000 years prior to that. When these prophecies were written, when Zechariah wrote them, when John wrote them, Daniel wrote them, Isaiah wrote them, there's this symbology that came across, and it said, at this moment in time, when Israel is reformed and these things come to pass within 80 years of Israel being reformed, Israel was reformed in 80 years, it's 2028, 7 years before that battle, tribulation will begin. If you took 2028 and back 7 years off of it, you get to about 2020, 2021.
Yep.
And the first horseman of the apocalypse comes, who is white. And these horses represented institutions. The colors represented institutions. In Rome, in Judean times, the only person who had a horse was a Roman soldier. Your average had a camel, maybe a donkey, but a horse was a war animal, very expensive to maintain. So they represent these warriors, and that's what the books all say, is that these warriors come, and the four horsemen of the apocalypse come. First one is white. What institution globally is represented by the color white? I'm reading it. I'm not really thinking about it. Is that the church? What's white? Goodness? Is that a country? And I realize the medical institution,
WHO,
is internationally known as white. The Red Cross is white with the red symbol. That's, hospitals are white. Then the first horseman is handed a crown, which he holds in his hand, and with it distributes a pestilence around the world that, unlike anything else, stops people and gets their attention, everybody globally, like nothing since the Great Flood. Yep. Okay, so he's got a crown in his head. What's the Latin word for crown? Corona. A pestilence, corona, touches everybody in the world. Nobody had their attention on anything since the Great Flood like this. You could be alive during World War II and in places in the world and not know World War II was going on, because there was not a lot of media, not a lot of coverage globally like we have now. But nobody was unaware of coronavirus. Every human being, even in Antarctica, is aware of it. So I'm like, all right, this is interesting, because didn't say it's going to wipe out. It said that the pestilence was going to get everybody's attention.
Yep.
This corona. Okay. Then there's this second horseman. So the second horseman is red. What institution is red? Communism. Mm-hmm. That second horseman unleashes a weapon in New Babylon, which the United States is arguably New Babylon. And we can go into why that is, but there's good evidence that it's the place in the world where all the brands come, all of the kings go to, the UN being in New York. And so now this is starting to get my attention.
Yeah, I bet.
So now when you start to take that into consideration, and mind you, this was written 3,000 years ago. And the writer said, here's the animals that will represent the nations of the earth. In the West, in New Babylon, there'll be an eagle. In Europe, a lion, then a bear, then a dragon in the east, then a leopard, spotted, multicolored, 10 heads, Europe. Great Britain is a lion. The United States is an eagle. Russia's a bear. China's a dragon. Like, what are the odds?
How many coincidences until mathematically impossible, right?
Yeah, if this was roulette, you'd be like, okay. If this was poker, you'd be like, I'm not
sure. Put it all on red, man.
I don't even have to turn it over.
No, it's not even be prophetic. It's just recognition of events that are occurring with signs that are happening, and just acknowledging that the two are existing in collusion and they're in parallel with each other. It's just signs, literally.
Yeah. So it's not a matter of belief. It's a matter of pragmatism. If I wrote something that said, next week you're going to go to the grocery store, and here's 6 items that you're going to pick out, and we sealed it in an envelope, and a week later you went to the grocery store and bought 6 items, and I guessed them all right, I would have a special on TV like Darren Brown.
Right. You'd have a documentary on TLC.
This guy wrote these prophetic things 3,000 years in advance.
Yes.
That all of these cultures had to come together and come up with all of that symbology. And apparently that not only were the, was the entire animal kingdom involved in this, but mythical creatures like dragons were also included.
Right.
So it's like, there's a lot of animals in the world to pick from.
That's right. But the significance of those animals also ties into the purpose and meaning behind it, does it not?
Exactly. So it's not just an esoteric exercise in fantasy.
Correct.
And then inside of biblical prophecy, within that 80-year window between 48 and 28, there's all of these things that had to happen according to the story and in an order. So now you look at combination lock, like your high school locker. I have to get the right numbers in the right order. And one of those things was that Israel would be reformed. And then Israel would be attacked by its neighbors, and they would have a stunning victory within 7 days and double the size of their nation. Right. Well, in 1967, maybe a lot of viewers here aren't aware that this occurred.
Yep.
The Six-Day War occurred in 1967, and all of the armies around Israel from Egypt to Syria were converging to attack Israel, and in one morning, Israel's air force went and wiped them all out.
There's a lot of miraculous stories from that time period. If you haven't read it, go look it up. Just literal stories from the troops that were there about miraculous things that occurred.
They said Jerusalem will be named the capital of Israel.
And that just happened, but a few years ago.
Well, the first time it happened, the Knesset did it.
It did.
The Knesset, the Israeli Congress did in 1980 when Reagan was president.
Correct.
Then the biblical timeline says, once that happens, New Babylon will have seven kings until this tribulation starts. And before the tribulation starts, the world will recognize Jerusalem as the capital. And that's what you're recalling was, I think, May
2018. I think it was 18 because 19 was when
and that was kind of the big thing that Trump did from a biblical perspective for people. And the Christian prayer breakfast group really pushed him hard to do that. But every president, and there were seven, by the way, after Reagan, there were seven presidents up until now. Biden would be the seventh one, seven kings of New Babylon, all promised to do this. Trump actually did it. So Obama had promised it. Bush one had promised it. Clinton had promised it. And nobody moved the capital, the recognition of the capital from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem until Trump did that. And he immediately sold off the old embassy in Tel Aviv. And they had a new embassy ready to go. And within like a week, this occurred. It happened just like that.
Yeah.
And that was biblically predicted to happen right before this. So one of the things that I think about frequently is that we're not in a universe that's stagnant. We're in a mechanical universe. The universe is constantly expanding, which means if you traveled back in time just 10 minutes ago, you'd be in the middle of outer space because the Earth has moved a great distance from where it was 10 minutes ago because you're in a physical clock that's expanding. The universe is a clock. And once you get that through your head, then you go, oh, this really, these time things matter. Suddenly, yes. Astrology makes sense. Why did all these wise cultures study the stars? Because they're looking at the clock.
And why are so many of them named around certain occult symbologies like Jupiter and Saturn and Saturnalia and the king and the queen and the way the stars are aligned? There's a lot of, I wouldn't even call that prophetic as much as just revelation. We talked a little bit about dark and light. There's always a yin and a yang to this. And, obviously the biblical components of this, I know personally, and I believe you do too, are part of the light and Jesus coming back and being part of that light. But of course, we remember there's Satan and his activities that are also not so hot, or actually very hot if you look at it from that direction. Have to do with tied into the way we live in this universe that we live in right now, including all the things, again, back to the Matrix, that are here to control our mind to give us to believe one thing when in something completely different is actually happening. And it takes a big break in our worldview to even get to that grasp.
Yeah. Now, when you look at this all and you go, okay, this is, sounds suddenly very depressing. Like we're headed towards.
Right.
This is why people don't want to talk about it, is because the question always comes up. What am I supposed to do? What do
cognitive I do? Cognitive dissonance, right? Like, how do I get past this if I accept it? And once I start to accept it, like, where do I go with this? This is so burdensome. This is such a heavy load. Like, what do I actually do?
When you wake up in the morning and here you got the red horseman, whether it be Russia or China or North Korea, I don't know which one, but 2 years ago when I wrote this, people were like, those people are not going to launch a nuclear weapon. That'd be out of their minds. There's mutual assured destruction. That'll never happen, blah, 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 blah. And yeah. I said, yep, no, where this is about, we're at the precipice of having this be a threat. And they said, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? You wake up this morning, all three of them are threatening to do that. We're testing hypersonic missiles. This week, Kim Jong-un is firing long-range missile test while Biden's traveling. We've got Putin threatening to put nukes on the border of Finland and shoot into wherever. I mean, he's openly said, if there's no Russia, there's no, what's the world
left? What's left? Yeah.
And he's made it very clear he's willing to launch a nuclear strike. Which was unthinkable 2 years ago. That's a
big and define levels of nuclear, right? And hypersonic, for those who might be listening, because hypersonic is a 7,500 mile an hour missile. Just to be very clear, there is no defense system readiness or planes or anything that can stop that missile from entering any airspace in the matter of minutes, if not seconds, depending upon where it's launched. And there's nothing you can do about it. Like there's no early warning system. There's no nothing. It's just here. And then there's nuclear in its radiation form. And then there's nuclear in its EMP form. There's two different kinds of things. Now, why would I want to designate the two of those? Because I know where we should go with this, because people need to understand, like, you know, Bill Gates is the largest owner of grain food and supply distribution in grasslands and as well as farmlands now in the country. They don't want to get rid of the Earth's resources, just to be very clear. So yeah. Why I don't believe in our Red Dawn moment, which again is another predictive programming to get us to where they're headed with this, is that they're going to nuke us. I don't think that's the issue. But the issue really is how, and it has probably been on the question for some very evil doers who are out thinking up new ways to make evil. How do I get rid of the people? Yeah. Leave all the rest of the infrastructure in place.
The easiest way to get rid of the people is have them kill each other.
Just shake the jar and let the ants fight it out.
That's what's always gone on. So, yes, yep. I'm not saying that they're going to launch a nuclear weapon that's going to land in the United States and detonate.
Right.
What I am saying is there's a high probability that there will be a high upper atmosphere detonation that will cause an EMP pulse that will knock out the power. And having lived through the power out for just a week in Texas a year and a half ago.
Yeah. Terrible. Saw that.
You just unplug a country. The amount of chaos that ensues is ridiculous. And you and I were talking about this earlier.
We did. One Second After by William Forsythe. It was based on, and to preface where you're headed and not to interject, sorry, was literally the understanding of a congressional report that said what would happen in a major urban environment if multiple nukes were to strike America, and what should we do to prepare our infrastructure and grid? You've been hearing about this a lot lately, how to harden the infrastructure and grid against EMP. Go look at your news sources. It's a mainstream topic of conversation among the other ones. And it was basically three of those in effect occurred. They were launched off of this ship that was blamed on North Korea, but China actually did it. This is part of the book story, but understand the book story was based on an actual report brought by Newt Gingrich into Congress. And it basically told we need readiness and preparedness, and because this is what we've discovered. The book was just meant to bring some non-fictional relationship stories to it in order to bring light and awareness to the real possibility that this is an issue, that this could actually occur and what would be the effect. Yeah, 72 hours would see a major chaos and disruption, you know, shake the jar and let people fight it out.
Yeah, this is what the NSA, the CIA, the intelligence community calls it. We're nine meals from
chaos. As you were saying. Yeah, 9 meals from chaos, 90 days from 90% destruction, 90% loss of life in 90 days.
Now, if you now go back to this morning in Sri Lanka.
Correct.
You've seen it.
I did.
I say everything's a test. I'm watching when I look at Sri Lanka, I'm like, oh, I'm watching a test. They're watching. This has been manufactured. We're going to see what happens to this civilization. And unfortunately, and I'll just say it out loud, it's not a comfortable thing to hear, but everything is tested out on brown people.
Sadly, well, let's go back. Where is there proof of that? Where is that evidence? Where is it not just conjecture?
Everything that's been every destructive thing we do as a white Western culture and banking system.
It is.
We test out vaccines in Africa. We test out. We do with populations that have do not have a high visibility, and it's.
Sadly, go back to the Tuskegee Airmen, go back to St. Louis when they sprayed
That is what's going on. Undeniably, there's.
Yeah, not conjecture, just to be understood. There is a pattern of behavior, including mass vaccinations and sterilizations in third world countries, where three or four major countries are suing the Gates Foundations with proof of sterilization for women and death of children with the vaccination rollouts. That's all provable. You can go out and look that. You don't have to take my word or even Ron's. It's there. We're just following
along. The idea of racism in your living room for most Americans is really not there.
Right.
It's really not.
But no, it's uncomfortable.
I mean, Barack Obama did win the presidency of the United States by a sizable margin. And I think for the most part, people were very hopeful and said, all right, we're going to give this dude a chance. Certainly there's pockets of people that are rotten.
Oh, absolutely. There are always.
But aside from that, some of our greatest talent as far as politics, thinking, science, actors, entertainers. But
Thomas Well.
We borrow a lot from Black culture in the white world.
Culture.
And so when I think of the word racism, and this is more of what I think of, is the abject experimentation on cultures that aren't consumers, that aren't in the Western consumer vein. And that when I look at Sri Lanka this morning, I go, yeah, that's what's happening is we're going to try this out here and see how well these are controlled demolitions.
Well, go back to the TED talk that Bill Gates did about in 2018, I believe, where he literally went through his equation and formula for how to reduce climate change. And the P in that equation was people. He even said, if we do a great job with vaccinations and other things, we'll be able to get the population down by 15%. You don't have to take my word for it. Go Google it. Go YouTube it. He's on the stage talking about this. So make no mistake. This is an agenda. And they are now slow rolling, and it's getting faster and faster to certain, like Sri Lanka and other places across the country. The dominoes are starting to fall in those locations where depopulation efforts are happening. Right. And whether you like to accept it or not doesn't mean that it's not a reality. Stick your head in the sand and it will still reach you eventually. What do we do about it? Right. What's the real...
Now that we've established that, if you're believing anything that we're saying right now, which I think you should at least take a look at, even if you don't believe it, take a look at it. And I think that even if you found out that you believe that 15% of what we have discussed thus far is 15% true, it should be concerning.
It should make you change something.
And then you should go, what's the to-do for me?
Yep.
So the number one to do is don't focus on the world. You are not going to change the world from your living room. You're going to change your living room from your living room. So let's start with your living room and your kitchen and your family. Let's get first out of nine meals from chaos. Let's solve that problem. That's something you can do. You can get yourself to, you actually can store a year's worth of food in your house quite easily. I recommend that everybody spend, and I'd use my credit card to do it if I didn't have any money. $3,000 on rice and beans.
Correct.
Because they store forever, and rice and beans are the perfect carbohydrate protein combination. There's 70% of the planet's people live off of a combination of rice and beans as the basis of their diet. If you bought that much rice and beans right now, you and your family would have enough rice and beans to live for 6 or 7 years. It's a lot. Now, then you add nutritional components to that, multivitamins,
fats,
sugar. Sugar is very important. We tend to think, oh, don't eat sugar. No, sugar, your body runs on sugar. It converts everything to sugar. So sugars, honeys, jams, proteins like peanut butter, things that store, yeast. I can take yeast, sugar, and flour, and I can make a bunch of stuff.
And it's going to be cheaper now than maybe by the time you're listening to this podcast. So, hopefully you're getting some of it now while supply chain and prices are still relatively attainable. Because these things can go fast, and they're going to go faster, as we've already discussed. That's the reason for the
All you need is the idea in the public that there is a potential for a shortage.
Toilet paper.
Don't believe me? I got two words for you: baby formula.
I've got a two toilet paper. We saw the first run on this as an example of a test run of what American culture and society would do if the media just propagated a big lie at that point, which was true. That we were running out of toilet paper. And you think it's really dumb, but everyone fell for it. And this shortage of toilet paper came not from a shortage of toilet paper.
From the run.
But from the run on the toilet paper. And it's, people should notice that now, because literally they're doing it again with baby formula.
With baby food. And then what? It, now you've created a commodity out of baby food. I would venture to guess there are people that are buying baby formula that do not have babies, for the potentiality of selling baby formula.
And it makes no sense, because originally the Abbott Pharmacy that was doing this, the Abbott for food manufacturer, had an FDA regulated shutdown 3 years ago for that product, but they just released the notice less than a month ago. Think about that. Why? Right? Because it was controlled. And then you put forward the slingshot of recognition that Gates actually owns. He's coming back to all this crap again. He's the largest owner in a baby manufacturing formula facility. Create the problem, come up with the solution. It's called a false flag, folks. And they're being perpetrated on you right and left. So what's the next one? I don't know. But just notice it's going. And gas is one of those things they're kind of doing to push their climate change. Just don't fall for the narrative by not panicking. That's kind of part of step one. Preparedness is not panicking, so don't keep falling for these lies and become part of the problem if you can help yourself.
And again, I'm planning for the worst, hoping for the best, but your analogy of shaking the jar with the ants. When you shake the jar with the ants, you don't violently shake the jar.
Yeah.
You rattle it, so you get the ants in there first. You agitate. And that's what's being done to our culture. Our culture is being agitated.
They are.
On politics, on why are we leaking stories about how the Supreme Court's going to rule? Why are we putting their addresses
right
on the street corner? Why are we publishing the addresses of their politicians? Why are we, like, this is agitation, is what you're seeing, is intentioned agitation, whether it's food, supply chain, employment, dollars. Like, suddenly there's, if this was a dance, if this was a DJ, we're talking about working 8 turntables here. Right. This DJ is out there working a lot of turntables to create agitation prior to chaos. And if you don't see that, then you're not looking.
You'll fall victim to it, right? You will fall victim to it.
But as we know, most people do not pay attention up front and later say, why didn't you tell me? So when 9/11 happened, I knew about 9/11 in July before it happened and I didn't say anything, I would probably be in jail right now. People would be like, why didn't you tell us? This guy had evidence. He knew what was happening. Boom. Right. That's what Guantanamo was all about.
Right.
But I'm saying, based upon the knowns, we're headed towards an event. And that event is coming.
We're at the nobody knows exactly, but we just know that all the indicators are lining up that there's something globally 9/11 and to how that
this is not happier and better tomorrow. We're not gonna
some precipice in the future here, a line we're crossing, a final, like, you know, a veil that's being broken, that once we pass that point, we won't return from it. And there's a line in that sand that's coming. I don't know when exactly. It could be 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 5 years. But literally, I don't think we got 5 years. I think we got 6 to 12 months. When I listened to Biden talk during his little propaganda there with Trump at the end of their last debate, he mentioned that we would have a dark winter. Now, people have estimated that to be the winters prior. But with all the current shortages, supply chain, gas growth, et cetera, what's going to happen, Ron, by the time we get into the coming months of, you know, winter with gas prices and stuff the way they are?
So here's the known. We don't know.
Yep.
And what I tend to do is look at probabilities and trajectories. What's the current trajectory that we're on? If you graphed the last just say from 9/11 to now, what would be the, would it be curved? Would it be a flat line? I think it would be a curve. And we're starting to see a climb here in discord and in disruption and in confusion and in pricing and weird markets and cryptocurrencies. And what's the event as human beings we're actually angling towards? And the event is the release of, I'll say, proper artificial intelligence. Is a digital god that we would be foolish not to obey, because it's doing all of these calculations and it's reporting back to us on our biometric chip what we should be eating, what we should be doing, and how we should be behaving. And we have Aura rings and we have Apple watches, and we're learning to let the technology tell us about our sleep and our nutrition and our calories and our heart rate and our meditation and our blah, blah, blah. So if that intelligence, that AI, got to be so perfect and gotten such a great feedback loop with us that it was giving us the best information about ourselves, why would we not do everything that it said?
It's for your safety. It's for your health.
You have a relationship with a digital god. My belief is that all of this is happening historically at this moment because the actual god is not going to let that happen.
Yes, because we call that transhumanism. Right.
Where the conflict is going to happen.
And that's where the conflict is going to happen. Absolutely. Darkness will obviously take some of that. And of course, God isn't going to let that happen. Right.
Well, here's the, and for, there's a lot of people that don't know the biblical story because they think that prophecy is difficult or that the Bible's difficult. And I want to be very clear. The Bible's written for 8-year-olds and 80-year-olds. It's written for IQs of 70 to 170. It's not complicated. Organized religion has taught you that it's complicated. Yes. The Catholic Church prevented people from reading for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Even removing books that gave context and added more confusion.
And I don't mean to pick on the Catholic Church. Every church has that, their variation of it. They're just very easy to pick on because they're the largest one and the most obvious to pick on. But the words, the story of the Bible and these prophetic chapters in particular are pretty simple. You read it, yes. You're like reading a movie. You're like, oh, okay, I get what happens next. One of the things that happens with this second horseman is, first, he unleashes a weapon that causes all people in New Babylon, so it's a very specific geological area, geographic area, to fight with each other. So that, again, would say, probably not a nuclear weapon that's going to kill them all. Probably the weapon is going to create the set the playing field for them to fight.
Going to shake the jar and let the rest of it fall out. Yep.
But at that moment, it says Satan, Lucifer, will step foot on the earth for the first time in millennia, which is counter to everything we've always been taught.
Yes.
We've been taught, oh, the devil made me do it. Da, 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 da. What if this progress that has currently, or devolution here that's happened in our culture over the last 1,000 years, what if it was just us? All by ourselves, making bad choices. But now the master playwright of evil is about to step foot in the theater.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly biblical, though. Sin came into the world, as we know. And from then, man has made sinful choices by influence through demonic forces. Even Jesus was influenced in Luke to be taken to the top of the Temple Mount and said, hey, I'll give you all this, and all you got to do is worship me. How many times do you think he's made that offer since then?
Yeah, and right. here's the other beautiful thing about the Christ I don't like to shove my religion on anybody. This is just a perspective.
It's a personal.
That Christ was tempted and tempted and tempted, and even in the Garden of Gethsemane before he died, he could have had God intervene and stop his own crucifixion. The Christ was half human. He was Mary and God. There was a God expressed himself in the flesh of a human being so that he could understand temptation and the perspective of a man. He'd not done that. Now, that is contradictory to God knows everything. I get that. This is the complexity and the mystery of faith. And then you go, okay, so God experienced this. But at that moment when the devil tempted Jesus said, all of this can be yours. At that moment in the Garden of Gethsemane, when Christ could have called in the angels to overthrow Herod and Pontius Pilate and not be crucified. Yeah. He said, no, I am going to. And that wasn't the God side of him. That was the freedom of choice side of him. That was the humanity. That was man stepping in with God, being one, saying, I am willing to sacrifice. That was the human side of Christ, not the godly side of Christ, which is the moment he became king of all men.
You're unpacking such an important point that people argue about in the choice of free will or, you know, predestination or any of these other things, and the realization that every man, woman, and child has a free will determination and a constant need to reaffirm that free will choice for that human in us, literally. And you're stepping on something very powerful that has become a very theological, religious debate amongst the churches, but in actuality, it's laid out in black and white very clearly.
It's simple. It's just we complicate it.
Very simple.
If you're watching this and you go, okay, still, what do I do? Take care of your family, get your food in order, get
your house in order.
Be mentally prepared to have the power turned off in your house for 6 months.
Yes, so preparedness is part of mindset, right? So
it lowers your stress.
Well, it actually does. This is one of the things we'll get back to just in a second, because we were on this a minute ago. But it's, you know, step one is part of that is also preparing yourself to even take action so that you know you need to go get the food. So I would even say step zero is if you're listening to this today and your mindset is even open to receive anything we're telling you right now, it is first get right with your mind. And if you are a believer, get in the Bible and get right with God, number one, zero step. From that point, you will then take preparedness. You will take plowshares into swords or whatever is necessary to move to step one to actually secure your household, knowing that these things are not just what if circumstances or maybe this is going to happen. It's going to inevitably occur. It's the same way we jokingly said yesterday, if there was a bus coming in the road, I would have a duty and obligation to push you out of the way, even if you didn't understand the bus was about to hit you. Well, there is a bus coming, okay, in the form of whatever color, shape, and size. It's going to hit us. It's probably a red bus, and it's coming regardless to the world, and we're trying to push you out of the way. That's all we're trying to do, nudge you right now into just getting out in front of this bus, because it is a 9/11 event coming in the global sense. And so step one is mindset control first and realization not to panic, and that preparedness puts less stress on you. It creates less stress for your family. It creates more cohesive environment, and you can do that anywhere you are. Like we happen to have taken that step a while back. You know, for me, it was 15 years ago. For you, it was 3 to 4 years ago, if I heard you correctly. And we have made plans to give us the opportunity to influence and affect others who would be willing to kind of do that too. I gain no benefit from you guys opening your mind and making a change. I get the satisfaction of knowing that, you know, at least I had a hand in pushing you out on a way of a bus. That doesn't mean that something isn't going to happen. Doesn't mean the bus isn't going to wreck. It doesn't mean something isn't going to occur that's going to be difficult. You can't avoid any of this. This is the whole point. No one gets out of this life alive. No matter what transhumanism lie you might buy into about Neuralink and downloading yourself into the cloud and crap. With an EMP.
Yeah, that's a false promise
promise. We're talking about EMPs. What do you think happens with technology when an EMP comes down, right? Those who are prepared and have, you know, communications vehicles and manpower to know that that is even possible will be the ones who keep communicating and running. And you know what? The militaries are all geared up for that. They're not ignorant to the reality of this.
Well, the other piece of that is people in the military and the police force have families as well.
Yes. And if you look at any societal breakdown like Brazil or other locations in Argentina, guess what happened? There was no more protection. They wanted to take care of their families too. And in fact, they became some of the Gestapo who started to use that authority to pull over other people and take their stuff.
Yeah, that's how it works. So I think the first fear in that to get over is the fear of death, because we are trained culturally to be afraid of it, not talk about it. We put people in caskets. Rarely do people see dead bodies in our culture.
Yes.
And here's the hardcore truth that you've got to wake up and get. You're going to die.
Mm.
Every single one of us is going to die at some point. So having a fear of death is actually irrational, because it's something that's definitely going to happen. It's as dumb as having a fear of breakfast. It's going to happen, man. So, okay, if you can swallow that and go, okay, I'm mortal. Great. Now, none of us know if it's going to happen to any of us today, 5 years from now, or 50 years from now.
Not the point.
But if I could say, take responsibility for your life, get yourself some food. And then you can do this if you live in downtown Detroit, or if you live like me out in the middle of the country. I moved out of the city and moved to the country because of the times that we're in. And get yourself covered to lower your stress level. So you have batteries, you have toilet paper, you have water or access to water, that you have food, like these very simple things, because you are not a warlord. Yep. I have a lot of friends that I see that, you know, they've gunned themselves up and they're taking trainings to, like, how many people are you really going to defend yourself from and kill before the authorities come and arrest you?
Right. Whatever authoritarian is left in that
moment,
you'll be subject to it.
Yeah, you'll be subject to that. That's not how you're going to get out of this.
No, that's like Jesus trying to fight the Roman Empire at that point with weapons. He knew that was futile.
You're not going to get out of it. So why don't you're better off being prepared to be a bit of a snail and going, hey, I'm going to retract and I'm going to go into my cocoon here and kind of just chill and see where the dust settles.
Yes. Be out of the way.
Understand, if this happens, you are now in a very difficult logic problem. Mm. If what we discussed thus far actually happens, that means that odds were we were right.
Mm.
And we were right about a lot of stuff. So
I'd rather not be right.
I don't want to be right. But if that's the case, then you have to go into the logical next step, which is you should look at the rise of a very rapid rise of a totalitarian digital government.
Yes.
That you will be subject to, and you will have a choice to be part of that digital government or not part of that digital government. And that choice will be a capital punishment choice. It will probably be, will I do what the state says and become a digitally tracked servant to the digital dollar and that
system? The system, that's right.
Or will I die?
Biblical, will you be martyred?
And
outside
my
of the system?
My choice is to die.
Yeah, die. I will not succumb to the system.
I'm gonna take the other road. Because I already know, based on the rest of the story.
Yep.
That I'm right.
I'm also right, and I'm confident in that. That I am not afraid of what's coming, and I will stand up, even if not to lead others, but also just stand on my own confidence of where I know I'm going. It's not the end; it's the beginning.
Every movie that we've ever seen about this, we celebrate the hero who says, lop off my head.
Yes, we do, because they're not afraid of death.
I'm willing to be that person because I'm not going to live as a slave. I'm not going to live on my knees. One of the things that helped me in business so much was I've never treated people poorly, no matter where they were on the rungs appropriate to me or in reference to me. I have a core belief that there's no man above me and no man below me, which means I conduct myself pretty nicely to the wait staff and to the hotel people and to the whatever, like wherever there's a social hierarchy, there's no man above me, no man below me. But that also means when someone tries to subjugate me in a corporation, in a government, I am not pleasant to deal with.
Yeah, it's that ingrained resistance that I've come to feel that myself, just maybe instinctually, that literally you cannot subjugate me if you try. I will resist at all levels. And that's one of the reasons why I had to get out of the corporate system a long time ago, is because I simply wouldn't subjugate myself to it.
And you know what the funny thing is, you know what the punishment at the end is? If you subjugate yourself, they simply wag their finger at you and go, well, you get out of here. We don't like you.
We don't like you. You're fired. Okay.
Great. Yeah, no, I just got promoted back to my own life.
Some people see it that way. Others panic. And I get it. And it may be easy for us to say these things. You might think it's easy for us to say these things because of where we're sitting now. Like, we're in the country. We've created some sustainability. My garden's bigger than most people's houses. But this has gone on for over a decade for me. This isn't new. This isn't, you know, established yesterday. This isn't just something that I thought might be nice to talk about on this podcast. No, I'm actually living it. And if you're on my social media, you know that. I live this. This is what I do. It's part of who I am now. It is an ingrained aspect of the life that I create, the people that I talk to, the kids that I'm raising up. It is who I am. And you can also start to take on some of those things like Ron and I have done here if you're willing to open your mind and hearts to the next step. No one is trying to convert you to Christianity or whatever our belief system. We just simply have that belief system that we know is true in our hearts and minds. Should you come to that conclusion on your own, great. But at the end of the day, we're all going to walk a path. And, you know, religion aside, we're all going to have an accountability moment, like it or not. Right, it's going to happen. We're all going to have to be accountable. I just have chosen
well, that's one. Why I'm not a preacher. Like I don't look at this and not go. I didn't go, hey, and I wrote my book, this last book about this around Christianity, the Jewish faith, and the Islamic faith. Why? Because God doesn't belong to it, any of those. He's not. He doesn't have a cross around his neck. He doesn't have a star around his neck.
He's for all people.
When you get there, you're going to discover there's just one God. One. And how he has revealed himself to us is, frankly, none of our business, one across the table from each other. Nor did, from my perspective, the Christ ever ask you to judge that person or say that what they're thinking is wrong. What the thinking that is wrong is pride, hubris, arrogance, thinking you're equal with that deity, thinking that you have control.
Yeah.
The answer is in submission and surrender.
Yeah.
And then doing some very simple things. Like if you look at the Lord's Prayer is not praying to Santa in the sky to bring you stuff. And most people who pray that way. It's a prayer of grant me nutrition, grant me peace, grant me the forgiveness, the same kind of forgiveness I give the people around me, and grant me wisdom. It's a prayer for wisdom. And that's the prayer Christ taught the disciples. It wasn't, dear God, can I get an Xbox?
Or dear God, give me wisdom. What instead he did, he gave you trials in order that you might learn wisdom, right? When you say, I want more money, well, you might find, like Job, you lose all your money so that you can gain your faith, so that you'll actually be receptive when the money comes. Like everything is kind of backwards to the way we've learned things, right?
Either I'm praying to God for my outcome, or I'm praying to God
his will, not his mine.
Outcome.
No matter what the will is, right? Like his will, not mine, no matter what the outcome. So good or bad, there is going to be an outcome. Like the preacher that I resonated with a while ago, just a video clip of him talking on a Sunday was literally, I'm going to either be okay or I'm going to be okay.
Yeah.
And when you bring that confidence, then what happens is you find the little happiness in all the things, even the conversation we're talking about, or the things that we're dealing with, or the way we're bringing little happiness into our lives. And through that, we will find moments of joy in the world we live in through the eyes of our grandchildren or great kids or, through anything we're doing or activities or even sharing moments together like this. But the real joy comes when we fully accept that we are not in all control and that we surrender all of that. Therefore, whatever happens here happens. Like it, at some point, Ron, I will unplug all of this. At some point, I will just disappear from the world. At some point, this will all just go away because it will be my last stand of resistance before they show up on my property because I will not succumb to the system. I will continue to back out of it. And others are going in and saying progressive and up and technology and 5G and all this stuff that's going to make life so much better and faster and easier and healthier and safer and da 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 da. And me, I'm like going the other direction. I'm like, hey, you just have that fun. Yeah, I'm going this way.
Growing the vegetables and, playing with the dogs and raising the chickens and eating their eggs and playing music and
enjoying every day as a present.
I live joyfully. I'm not living in fear. I'm living in expectation.
Sure.
The story's been told.
It's been told.
I'm not fearful of the story and I'm not fearful of the outcome and I'm not fearful of death because I know I'm going to die anyways at the end of the story. At the end of my story, I die. I don't know how it works out for everybody else, but so far that seems to be how all the stories end. And if I get to choose how I live until then, well, I'm going to live productively. I'm going to live in love with my family and feed them and enjoy time together and my animals and I'm living in the Garden of Eden. I'm doing what he told me to do. I'm here just caring for the land and the animals and the thing that we were told to do. He didn't tell me to get smarter. He told me not to eat from the tree of knowledge. He told me I didn't need to know anymore. I didn't need to get smarter. I needed to submit more. And the more I submit, the less I think I need to know, the less arrogance I have, and the more submission I have, the happier I am, the more joyful I am. And I realized,
yeah,
what did I do to cause anything in Sri Lanka this morning?
Not a thing.
What could I do to stop it?
No, not a thing. And that's where we can't quite take that on, because we'll have to deal with each aspect of that.
What about the price of gas?
Yeah. I mean, look, these things have to happen, right? They were foretold. They have to occur. These are things that are not going to, they're not going to slow down, because you talked a little bit about this yesterday. And that was like the timeline is either, in some minds, it's going up and the time is progressing to greater and bigger things. But in actuality, the Bible tells us in very simple language, it's actually a countdown. It's actually going the inverse relationship. Things are coming down from Christ on the cross.
We're about to go through a portal, a big portal.
To an eventual
new type of governance. So hopefully we all live to see that new type of governance. And I have, you know, a really good friend of mine asked me a couple weeks ago, because what if what you're talking about doesn't happen? What if you wake up and suddenly everything gets incrementally better in every area, and everything starts to improve, and technology starts to improve, and society starts to heal itself? Will you say that you were wrong?
What? Okay.
And I said, yeah, I'll say that I was wrong. I'll say that I thought that this was the moment where this was all happening, because this is where all the arrows were pointing. And if there's a big U-turn, I am confident enough as a human being to say, man, I misjudged that, but that's not going to make me say I'm going to abdicate my faith.
Yep. Or change your lifestyle.
No, because I'm now much happier than I was in the anxiety of daily dog eat dog 5 years ago. So, I'm willing to be wrong. Just, I'd love to be wrong.
Of course we're willing to be wrong, because if we're wrong, then people are not going to get sicker. They're not going to die. Societies aren't going to have a problem. That some aspects of that are going to get better. But when that conversation happens, I always look at it maybe a little, I mean, I look at it a little differently. I look at it like, okay, if they're going to get better, then something dramatically bad has to happen to the bad people who are making it happen right now.
Yeah, and I go along with the argument. Like, I can imagine the discussion.
Yeah.
But the reality is, I wake up every morning and it's cha-ching, 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 cha-ching. It's four or five more things every day.
Yeah.
And I do not see the boat turning. I see us coming.
Change. A change is coming. There's no doubt about that. To the implication level of how dramatic is the change, I mean, God knows, right? The implications of that may be more positive, yet still impactfully different than the current system we're setting in right now. And to me, though, knowing that if you follow that biblical lineage, you follow that word and continue on through the rest of the story, you understand that there are powers of darkness at work right now that have yet to reveal themselves, and soon they will do that, which tells me it's going to have to get a little worse, whether I like it or not. That's how the storyline goes before it gets better. Now, some people believe that there's a rapture that's going to occur and that we're going to be spared some of these tribulations. Where are you at in that? Is the rapture on your mind? Is it part of your understanding, or do you not believe it at all?
So reading all the same scriptures that everybody else reads, my understanding of it is the actual idea of rapture came about in about the 1850s and was a very specific church-focused ideology that sprang forth. And it also is a very relieving idea to people.
Sure.
So, I'm one of the good people. I'm going to get out of this. Historically, there's nothing biblically true about it. God has never just abjectly set people aside. Unfortunately, part of being in love with God and him being in love with you is going through a little bit of stress in this life. No one has ever abjectly been pulled out of the stress entirely. So there's no historical reference for it. I can't find specific biblical references that say this is definitely going to happen. And if it were to happen, it's such a powerful and important event. I think that it would be very clearly stated by Christ in all four of the Gospels from the people that were around him, said, I am going to come back prior to this. And everything that we have that we really read says, you're going to go through a tribulation, and the tribulation is what's going to purify you. And the folks that are tied to that, are tied to me through that, I'm coming back for them, and they're going to be set aside in a different way. And in the government that I Yeah. Well, and when I set up this new government, there's very specific language in the Bible that I'm going to have a council of 1,000, and I'm going to, like, there's these numbers and things, and you're like, well, this is weird, and it's frankly beyond my comprehension.
Sure.
And it's not where I live. I live in the present, so I don't worry about, like, I'm not thinking that through.
Yeah. Some of that came from things like Elijah being, you know, quote unquote, raptured from death, which gives some examples of God being, you know, willingness to take people in from death. And but I think that may have been
Israel. He didn't do it. He didn't do it in Germany with the Jews.
Well, there's been some significant events that occurred in isolation. You know, even then, it was sort of isolated, not globally, where I see it changing because now we've moved into more of a global experience. And like you mentioned, a 2019 COVID White Horse event that has shifted us from certain levels of sovereignty into overarching world. We're all one world of people now that's having to deal with one, you know, major world type of events. In the end, though, I also don't believe that we escaped certain tribulations. Not in my studies, anyways. There will be a tribulation period. Are we here for the great tribulation, which in Revelation is the bowl judgment, the wrath of God poured out on earth? No, because he said he wouldn't pour his wrath out on his people. So there will be a period where the wrath is poured out on this earth, but it's not for the people that believe. It's for the remnant.
Because there's this period that says, you know, Christ is going to reign for 1,000 years.
There is the millennial.
And so,
period should be nice.
So theoretically, but now this is a future telling, and I don't do a whole lot of future telling.
Yeah.
I'm not predicting anything. I'm just telling what I've read.
Sure.
So let's say that there's this period of 1,000 years where Christ reigns. Well, okay, there must be an amazing government on earth. Things must be progressing. But then he leaves. The reign comes to an end.
It goes backwards again. Yeah, at the second and third.
Leaves.
Yep.
And now here's where I go. Is this where the transhuman thing comes from? And this is probably a really weird aside, but I have this friend I work with. He's a NASA scientist. And we've done a lot of work and look into crop formations.
Mm-hmm.
And alien life forms, and you know, 80% of the world belongs to one of these major faiths, whether it's Christianity, Islam, Hinduism.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's 20%, 30% of the world is, I'll say, agnostic or atheist. But if you ask that group of people, they'll say, well, I believe in UFOs. I believe in aliens. So like most people believe in some higher form of intelligence, whether it's deity or whether it's alien. What if, and we have indications from some of these crop circles and crop formations, because they are they're highly mathematical. The results the things that are embedded in these crop formations are highly mathematical, like Leonard Euler's theorem. And so once upon a time, a group of students at a university, and I believe it was in England, and I have the photographs of this. They laid out, and it took them days and days and days to lay out a crop formation that they built that was kind of like the plaque that went on the Voyager spacecraft. They said, we're humanoid. This is where we are in the universe. We're carbon-based units. This is our languages. These are our sexes, blah, blah, blah. So it's this whole kind of plaque, but laid out in a gigantic marsh. The next morning, the answer came in the marsh. An identical thing overnight, which took these folks days and days and days to create, and the reply came, we are silicon based life forms, and we're just that, and we live in this part of the universe. And you have to go, is that us? Are UFOs us visiting us?
Now you get into time travel and string theory, and there's a real possibility of obviously that occurring. And I actually believe that, even though I haven't experienced it, and it's not a sci-fi basis. Why do I have a confidence in that? Because I believe in a deity who is multidimensional, 10 dimensions, meaning all time, space, and travel has no definitive time. Time was put in place as a construct for us, for our minds. But this is a God who is a ultimate power vehicle who created the universe, and time to him is irrelevant to us. So at the end of that is, yeah, could time be a travel? Yeah, why not? Like, why is that so far-fetched to not recognize that it's not impossible that time and travel do exist?
I just want to make sure that in case anybody thought we were kind of crazy, they could go, they're totally crazy.
Now we've fully passed the veil. Yeah. Well, look, you cannot study Tesla for a length of period of time and not deconstruct the power of our creation that we're setting in front of, to layers of complexity that is so beyond human brain power, limited brain power, and literally by God himself, to stop us from understanding these things until it will be revealed to us. Literally, we simply cannot comprehend it. We're not there.
Well, and I'm a person who's willing to say, if you listen to what we've talked about today and went, those guys believe some crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm. Might sound like that.
Yeah, I'm fine. I'm totally fine with that.
Holy cool with that. I've been called worse things.
You can't think about your own, but I'm willing to say that. And you can't, it doesn't matter who you are. You have to look at your own intellectual architecture and go, well, maybe I believe some stuff that's kind of, we're all operating on belief. None of us are operating on facts. We all have very, very limited facts and are operating primarily on belief. And if you think you're not, you need to reevaluate that, because you are.
Question the authority. There was a study in 1955. I forget exactly the professor who did it, but the study had to do with authoritarian belief and whether a group could overpower an individual, even if the individual knew they were right. Got the answer right. They had the other group members all agree the answer was wrong, and then try to convince the person who was right that they were right, even though the person who was right had the right answer in the first place. And 80% of the time, the person would capitulate. 80% of the time, even though they knew they were right, they would capitulate. I would be the 20%. I know that now. I would be the 20%. If I got a group of 20 people right now on this call who all agreed with exactly what you and I are saying, and one person listening to this call right now was different, guess what would eventually? 80% of them would capitulate, even if they didn't understand what we were talking about yet, only because of the authoritarian attitude of the message. Go to the media today. The point I'm connecting the dots on for your brain here, and you know what I'm going for, is go to the media right now. The media has gotten everyone, 80% of them, to believe lies. Lies.
It's absolutely true. And we also have a culture that has not survived hardship. If you were born in 1900, you would have survived, hopefully, if you lived long enough, you would have survived World War I, the Spanish flu pandemic, depression, World War II, Korea, Vietnam. That's a lot.
That's
you would have started without any electricity in your house and would have ended up with color television in your house.
That's right. What a strange time, right?
Airplanes didn't exist. Jet travel existed by the end of that period. Like, my grandmother saw people land on the moon. There was no such thing as a vehicle when she was born. There were no cars. There were horse tracks in South Dakota. She ended up working for Northwest Airlines. She retired from there. She was a nurse. My grandfather worked for Northwest. They saw, like, 100, they lived to be about 100, and they saw the whole world go from an agrarian, non-communicative planet to, like, the internet. And I realized I was born in 1966. I didn't experience any of that hardship.
Yeah.
Most
neither did
people
I.
alive, even boomers, maybe got a piece of Vietnam.
Yeah.
Their earliest memories are probably like Kennedy being shot. There's nobody alive here that has lived through a consecutive series after series of hardships, particularly in this country.
Yep.
Nothing. We are all soft.
Yeah, actually are. We're a giant beta society. I'm the first to admit that.
Yeah. Yeah, we're soft.
We've learned and lost so many skills. So many skills. And just coming out here and being around the Amish community that's out here, I feel woefully behind, even though I've been out here for a long time learning many skills and trades that I didn't understand that I now have become more proficient in. I still feel woefully behind to the level of skill and abilities they have daily to operate without electricity or other mechanisms that we take for granted today, that they just live on a day-by-day basis. And I'm fascinated by it, frankly. And I'm trying to adapt some of those things for my own mindset in my own house and my own activities so I get more and more comfortable. But even then, you know, levels of preparedness. We talked about step one. Step two, of course, is, you know, in my mind, it's doing something that proficiency outside of the system. It's learning how to do some woodworking or how to garden or create or do something with your hands. Get in the door, you know, build a small garden, even if it's in your backyard. Learn how to grow things. It's not too late. We're in the growing season. Get out there. It feels great to produce something. Just keep in mind the amount of quantity you have to produce. So there's other things you need to do, but at least get started, get hands, get proficient, learn how to do things for yourself. and start putting yourself in a position. That may even be, you know, starting or growing a business, because you need to get out of the system. And it's going to make it a whole lot easier for you in the next 3, 6, 9, 12 months as to whatever occurs or whatever thing's going to happen at the next stages for you to get out of that system and just be okay saying a big old F you to your job or whatever it is, knowing that you now have some independence and freedom, not just of mindset, but of purpose, goals, activities, outside of that control mechanism. Big.
Every culture and system that collapses, and you can look at this tomorrow morning in Sri Lanka. Every single person wakes up the next day an entrepreneur, whether they want to be one or not. They're buying or selling something on the street. They're hustling to stay alive and keeping their families. So that you don't have a choice. Now, the second piece of that is, in the last 100 years, this idea of a century, we have seen the rise of these global elite families, their children, and now their children. So these cartels, whether they be from England, Germany, China, the U.S., we all know the brand names of these families. They will tell you from a political perspective, their goal is to equally distribute knowledge, wealth, happiness, and better life for everybody on the planet. Do you have any evidence whatsoever that they have done that? They have consolidated power, control, wealth, and everything to themselves. And now there's a whole lot of extra people at the bottom that they don't really need. So back to George Carlin, you ain't invited.
That's right.
So if you think for a second that you are, there's some benevolence at the top of this system right now, globally, you are fooling yourself. Hmm. They're not great people that are doing great things. They're unfortunately in power. They have a club named Skull and Bones for a reason.
The last part of that would be, you know, as we prepare, and just kind of the final thing in my mind, and you can echo yours, is to obviously understand what you can control and let go of the things you cannot control. Some of the things we talked about today are things that you may not be able to affect or influence right now, immediately, but you can start to make those changes. You can start to make that effect. You can start to do something with it every day and build on top of it. You can't eat that whole elephant at once. It's taken a long time for many of us to get to this place. And one of those things about the mindset and preparedness of your house and food, and et cetera, is also to prepare a community that can help train and build together. And that's why I mentioned the Amish component of this now, as well as my family and others. That community of barter and trade and skill, et cetera, is very important. In our local community and network, we both know the people who can work wood, the folks who understand the horses, the people who are mechanics, the people who could, you know, help with technology or whatnot, those who are more in defense and military nature, those who are more in homestead and gardening in nature. In our community, we have kind of identified all those people, and we've purposely had conversations with all of them to the point that our, you know, community, if necessary, can turn into a little bit of a compound.
And you need to have a culture. And I think that's one of the things that the internet has taught us to do something that it's very nefarious, and maybe accidental, maybe by design. But the fact is that you feel like you're personally connected to people across the country that can't help you if stuff goes down.
6 miles is a long ways away when you stop and really think about it.
Exactly. So the step two, kind of like get your house in order of your supplies and your plan and no power for 6 months. Think about living that way is, who is around you that you know?
Yes.
You need to get to know your neighbors and get to care for them and care about them and start building a personal network like really rapidly, because that is your lifeline, and you are their lifeline and they are your lifeline. And you have been trained by social media to disconnect from those people and not have neighbors and to even hate them.
Mm-hmm.
And find the thing that's wrong with them. Like, that's what social media is about, is creating tier systems where people learn to dislike each other.
It was built for that reason. It was a DARPA project. It started.
You need to do the opposite. You need to fly into social media and go shake some hands and bake some bread and take
some people.
You know, yes, with know people and love people that are around you in your community and start to build community. Because those are the people that are going to thrive during any collapse. And if you know, most of us don't have grandparents or great grandparents that were alive during the Depression. My generation's pretty much gone.
Yeah.
But if you, I did at a point in my life, I had aunts and uncles and grandparents and even great grandparents that survived quite well through the Depression. And what they all told you is that they looked out for each other because they were a big family. They also had a neighborhood and neighbors that looked out and cared for each other. Yeah. And that is oddly what biblically, and I say biblically by including all of the religions, we were trained to do is live in a village with each other up to, you know, a village of 150 to 500 people. And, you know, to get up to the Dunbar number, whatever that is, I think it's 150 people that get into that care for each other. And that, I say, don't wait another day.
Find out who your neighbors are and in some ways profile them a little bit. And I don't mean by color, because everybody suddenly jumps to, oh, he's segregating. No, I mean by what kind of person are they?
Character. Are they by character.
Risk? Are they high risk, low risk, medium risk? Do they have certain skills, traits, and sets? Can I offer something to them that they can offer to me? Not just always about them, but me too. And where does that fit into the balance? Because at some point you may find your closest adversary and anything that goes wrong could be the person right next door to you. And that's the last thing you want when this, because this is an occurrence that happened very quickly in Germany when neighbors started to turn neighbors in and family and friends started to turn each other in order to save themselves. And again, that may have been an example of a historical event, but the Bible references that too, very clearly. That there will be a time when something like that occurs en masse. And to some degree, we saw a little inkling of that with this whole vaxxer, anti-vaxxer thing that just occurred as to whether or not, you know, hey, look, these people are anti-vax. Don't let them into anything. Don't let them around us. Don't let them in social events or family events, or they can't come into the restaurant anymore. Or, I mean, whatever, it suddenly became people were turning each other in. Restaurants were turning each other out and all kinds of crazy stuff. When it gets a little more dangerous, don't you think that's going to get a little bit bigger?
And what are the criteria? Because
random,
you suddenly have a ton of social issues that people are happy to put yard signs on and t-shirts on and scream at each other about things that they may never even experience in their lives ever. And they are vitriolic over ideas that actually they're not going to experience. And those are being used to divide the culture. So
we're going to have to unpack this some more on a different episode. Yeah. But we're going to stop here for a time being. And then I'm going to have you come back because there are about 20 things in there that we could each spend about an hour unpacking each of those, both historically and in current events, which might be kind of fun to do. At least I think so, because these are interesting conversations for me. But Ron, hey, this has been great, man. Thank you for coming on
I appreciate having the dialogue, absolutely. And it's not my normal podcast dialogue.
Exactly right.
Pretty normal weekend dinner time conversation around here.
Well, some people might be having a weekend dinner a relationship with us while listening to this podcast.
So go out and spend the first $100 on a good food for your family that stores. Do that. Go meet one neighbor. Go get $100 worth of storable food, and make some good decisions for yourself in the short term. And as you do that, recognize how much lower your stress is and how much better you feel by taking those simple actions. And realize that once you continue those actions, that it actually lowers and lowers your stress. And you can turn off your TV. These people
aren't turn off the TV. Turn off the media. That's the most positive message we can probably end with here, outside of what you just said about food and water, is just turn the freaking media off. Stop listening to the politicians and go out and talk to somebody, talk to your neighbors, and have a conversation. That's your biggest positive thing you can do today.
Thanks, Neil. I appreciate you, brother.
If you like this episode, please share it with people you think will enjoy it as well. Thank you for listening, and be sure to tune in next week for a brand new episode of High Voltage Business Builders.